Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this show is for January 3rd, 2026. It is our first show of the year. And, who here had unauthorized invasion on their 2026 bingo card? Anybody? Because if you've been paying attention at all, you will know that either late last night or early this morning, depending on where you live, the United States military invaded the sovereign nation of Venezuela, deposed and captured its president, Nicolas Maduro, and now that's pretty much all we know for so far. The whole thing happened really quickly. There is a very big chance that Venezuela's own military probably betrayed Maduro, considering how the whole thing happened without the Venezuelan military even firing a shot. But that's not the only thing we will be discussing this week, obviously. There's some other stuff, including Zoran Mamdani, as of a couple days ago, is now officially the mayor of the city of New York. We also got news from Jack Smith, specifically the interview he gave with the House Judiciary Committee. We got all that and a bunch of other stories, including some entertainment stuff, as always, including a new title holder for highest grossing animated film. And we also got a teaser trailer. We got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. But before we get started talking about all the stuff we've been doing up to the point this week, we will start, as is tradition, with Chris. Chris, tell us what you've been doing this week.
Yeah, it's been a kind of a quiet week for me. I've been working some, but have not really had much else to do besides that. So I've been watching some things. We also been real cold this week. Maybe been below free. With some good snow on New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
which made the roads nice and shitty for the drive home. But yeah, when I got home, watched Stranger Things 5, the season finale, or the series finale. And it was good. It kind of does exactly what you kind of expect out of it.
Yeah.
But you do get a good bit of conclusion. Bit of an epilogue to it that kind of shows what's happening to everybody. And all that, so it's recommend checking it out. Seems like the theater experience was pretty good for people for going and seeing that, so that's fun. Then I watched One Battle After Another on HBO Max.
Yeah,
which is a very weird movie.
Oh, I've been told that much. Yeah, it is different, is what I've heard.
Yeah, so kind of features this couple that is kind of anarchist revolutionary, working with a bunch of these people trying to upset the status quo, I guess. They're doing a lot of like bombings and freeing of people and all this kind of random stuff.
Yeah.
And they end up having a kid,
at
a certain point. And then the mom gets arrested, doing more of that stuff, and kind of disappears from their lives, and Leo and the baby go off to, you know, assume a new life in another place. And essentially, Leo's character basically just becomes an extremely lazy, paranoid revolutionary, so much so that when the thing that he was supposed to be prepared for starts happening. Like 16 years later, he does not remember any like the code words or anything that he's supposed to remember.
Yeah.
So he's basically trying to figure out how to get his back, save his daughter, as well as get back at the guy that is behind all of this and do all that kind of stuff. It kind of just has a bunch of wild things happen. Like, how is this man not dead for being so stupid? So yeah, it's pretty good. I don't really know what the point of all of this was, but it's pretty entertaining. Let's see. Then I watched the rest of The Chair Company, the last two episodes, and it ends. I don't remember what. I don't know what was accomplished. Just kind of ends on a revelation that you're like, wait, who's that? What is this? What is going on here? Then it just ends, and it's like, all right, I guess that's makes as much sense as anything else that's going on here. So, there's that. For what I've been playing, I've been putting time into Anthem, because it's shutting down here in another week or so. So I was kind of like, oh, I'll check this out. I'd already started it, so I was just kind of in some of the early game stuff. And luckily for the story missions, at least there are other people around to matchmake into it. The where I'm at, starting to open up some of the side stuff, and there's less of that. I need to start those up as just solo things versus leaving it in open matchmaking. But yeah, it's not in great shape. It's a game where, kill a bunch of enemies, and a lot of them have bugged out death animations. They'll just go kind of flying off or just stand still like they're gonna do something, or I think even some of them just ran around even though they were dead. You just couldn't do any more damage to them until they just like, oh, you're supposed to be gone, disappear. I was like, I would have thought they would have fixed some of this, but I guess EA pulled the plug too soon for them to even do that. And I feel like if they had gotten the chance to keep working on it, they would have just turned off the stupid overheating thing that just really does nothing for it. Or at least have something that would drop every once in a while that would make that last longer. Because I think they just put you in cooled state all the time, which slows it down, but it doesn't turn it off anyway. But yeah, it's pretty good once you kind of get the hang of the stuff that doesn't really work that well. But otherwise, it's got a lot of weirdness and things. You're like, oh yeah, they really did try to do the Destiny thing, except with their own thing on top of that. Because it's weird to have the story moments of multiple characters where they're all just standing like, oh, we're all staring at you while we're talking. And it's like, this is unnatural. They don't often look at each other as they're talking to each other. It's very much that kind of, oh, you're part of the scene technically. But yeah, it's got a lot of that stuff going on. But yeah, it's all right. I'm looking forward to play some more of it, but yeah, it hasn't really gotten too much better. Luckily, I have a good gun from the special edition. That's all I need right now. There's some weirdness with the controls because I keep swapping to the alternate one without knowing how to do it. Then I had to look it up. It was just you hold a certain button, and you swap, but it did not show that button at any point on a screen. Where it's like, is this like every other shooter? You just hit triangle, does it keep swapping? And it's like, no, you have to hold it. And it's like, oh, that's a little weird. And I keep getting upgraded like special stuff for your different special attacks, and so that just keeps changing constantly without me really learning what any of it really is good for. I was like, well, this has a 9 instead of a 6, so that's probably better to equip. But yeah, that's Anthem. It's fine. I don't think you can buy it anymore unless you go get a physical edition, but they're selling it for like literally like a buck or two for the last couple years, so There's that. That's been pretty much what I've been doing.
All
How about you,
right.
Brandon?
Well, as for me, like as I mentioned last week, I got a Nintendo Switch 2 for Christmas last year, this year, as long as well, I say this year, but last year, as well as the PSVR 2 thing as well, The version of the Switch 2 I got is the one that came with the bundle, the Mario Kart World bundle. And of course, it's not actually a physical copy of Mario Kart World. It's a digital download that you have to get. And because you and on top of all that, because I still have my original Switch, I also had to transfer, all of my data from my old Switch to the Switch 2 and all that, and that was a little bit of a thing, but it eventually got it all well and done, and got all my stuff downloaded, and I was like, all right, time to play some Mario Kart. So I played Mario Kart World, and it's I mean, what do you want me to say? It's Mario Kart. The formula works. And there are a lot of things about that game that I found. There are parts of it that I like and parts of it that I find kind of boring. I loved the whole idea of like having to, race from one course to the next. I actually did think that was really cool. What they don't tell you though is that racing from one course to the next actually counts as an actual race in and of itself. And in fact, with a lot of the major cups that you're running for in the Grand Prix, at least two of the races that you're going to do, and there's usually like four of them maximum, they are going to be just that, rushing from one course to the next. So it's not really like a circuit race where, you're like it, where you're like, on one course going around in a circle. There's a lot of these where it's like the checkpoints are like spread out over a long distance, and like they don't, and it for the record, like I said, I do like that feature. I do love the idea of like this, this sort of world being very expansive, and then having to race from one course to another, because it adds a real sort of charm to the whole thing, and it makes it feel very large and expansive compared to like what most Mario Kart games are. But I've basically completed all the courses. And for those of you who don't know, I think there's like six main courses, and then there's a seven sp six cups, and then there's a seven special cup. That you get when you get gold in, when you get, first place in all of the other cups. And the last one is the one that is the one where Rainbow Road is on. And Rainbow Road, the way that it's done in this game, I both kind of like it and I kind of don't. Again, it's one of those long distance tracks where you're going from one area to another. And the Rainbow Road itself is like, it's the primary feature of it, but it's only like a part of it. They do like the version that they make of Rainbow Road this time around is probably the prettiest and best looking they've done up to this point. With a bunch of like really cool features on it and a bunch of like little Easter eggs and stuff that are sprite that are, sort of spread out. They even have the obligatory reference to Night on the Galactic Railroad, with having a huge, train being, flying through the sky and everything. But the so that game, it's a lot of fun. The one thing, and you're probably going to know exactly what I'm gonna say, that I'm not sort of struggling to really understand what the point is the whole free roam feature. Because, like, I get the idea behind it, and I like the idea behind it, and, there are parts of it that I like, but It's just the whole area, there's just not a lot of stuff there to do. And you know what I'm talking about, right, Chris?
Yeah, it's kind of just a hollow set of objectives.
Yeah, it's hollow, it's kind of bare, like there's not really a lot to do. Other than, the various challenges that it'll show up. And I mean, don't get me wrong, those are nice and fun on their own, but it's like, there's that, and then there's like collectibles, and that's about it. I also gotta say, the one thing I really don't like about the way they did with the free roam whole thing is because, it's such a large area to cover, and like there's no like there's like it's just too cumbersome to navigate, especially when it comes to like you're going into the free roam, because they got that whole thing where it's like you have to like choose one of the characters from the map to go to a particular area on the free roam. I'm like, dude, I've been playing Pauline this whole time, just let me play Pauline. But I don't know, there are things about it I like, but there are also a lot of stuff that just kind of just leaves me sort of shaking my head in confusion on why they decided to do this. But yeah, so I've been playing that. I also finally got back to playing Splatoon 3 again, mostly because, now that I've got a Switch 2, I've got, a new Joy-Con controller. And for those who don't, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but my last Joy-Con controller for my old Switch was starting to suffer from serious Joy-Con drift, and I never really got around to replacing it. So now that I've got the Switch 2, I've got a brand new controller, which, quite frankly, I'll just be completely honest, I much prefer the Switch 2 controller to the old Switch controller. That whole like the whole like magnification feature for the Joy-Cons is just so superior to the original one, where you were just snapping them in place. I will that said though, I will say this, as a sign of caution, when you're attaching the Joy-Cons to the controller peripheral, be sure that you don't have like a finger or anything in the way of it when it snaps, because once it snaps on pretty hard, and it can take a chunk out of your finger if you're not careful. But anyway, so I'm playing Splatoon 3 again. I finished the main campaign last night, finally. I still need to go back and do the side order DLC, finish that one up. And I'm also, I've got my Nintendo subscription account back, so I'm going to be doing, online competitive Splatoon stuff as well. Which I'm happy about. I'm happy to get back into that, 'cause I love playing Splatoon online. It's incredible. It's just very fun. Yeah, as far as like gaming is concerned, that's basically all that I've been doing. The other thing that I've been doing, other than books, reading like I constantly do. Those of you who are on the Discord will already know this, but for all of you who aren't, last Sunday, my mom had to go to the hospital. The reason had to do with, me and my family, we all got the flu over Christmas. And me and my dad, we eventually got over it more or less. Like, you may notice I still have this sort of minor persistent cough, but that's slowly going away too. My mom, on the other hand, just kept getting sicker and sicker. And then Sunday she woke up and she literally didn't have a voice. She couldn't speak. And my mom is notoriously like stubborn when it comes to stuff like this. She's the type of person to just wait until it gets to the absolute worst, and then she'll finally go to the doctor. Well, we finally took her. She finally went to the doctor, and they put her in hospital. And we eventually found out what had happened. She had developed double pneumonia. from the flu virus that we had all gotten. On top of, and by double pneumonia, I mean that she had it in both lungs. And on top of that, it was bacterial pneumonia, which is much more serious than just your regular viral pneumonia. Like, viral pneumonia sucks. I've had it before. It's not fun. But, you know, you get the proper medication and rest for a couple of days, you'll get over it. Bacterial pneumonia is a bitch to get over because you need to find, you have to have like the right antibiotics to go in you. And there's some side of, there's like other things that come from having pneumonia like that. And one of them is the fact that you end up start hyperventilating. And the thing about hyperventilating is that, you know, you not only do you not get enough oxygen coming in, you don't have enough carbon dioxide going out. And what that ends up causing is it ends up causing AFib. Chris, you know what AFib is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, she was getting an irregular heartbeat, and which was in turn causing, you know, it was like a cycle. It caused the, you know, she had heavy breathing that caused the AFib, and that just made all the stuff worse. So anyway, she is still over there. She's definitely getting, you know, at least feeling a lot better, 'cause, and I'm quoting my dad here, you can tell she's feeling a lot better because she's getting really bossy. And her voice has also returned somewhat. But the problem is they still have not figured out like where the bacteria is actually coming from. They don't know if it's coming from her lungs or if it's somewhere near where her heart is. Now, when they find out each one's, they can just give her the proper antibiotics and that should clear it up. But because she is like still like hyperventilating, they've essentially she they've had to like put her in and out of ICU like a couple of times. Even though, like I said, she is feeling a lot better and she is, you know, talking and her voice is back and everything, but because of the hyperventilation, you know, they haven't been able to go in and do the procedure to determine where the bacteria is coming from. So, you know, anyway, long story short, she's still there tonight, and hopefully they'll be able to get her hyperventilation down tonight so that tomorrow they can actually do the procedure and find out where the bacteria is. Because once that happens, they can finally take her off the ventilator and give her the antibiotics, and hopefully she'll be home sometime next week. But yeah, the whole situation's been kind of stressful, as you can probably guess. Honestly, the only I the only the thing is I'm both obviously. I'm not worried because I know that, you know, she's, you know, it's again, she'll pull through, but I'm still concerned because I'm human. Also, I'm just kind of pissed that she let it go this long before we finally decided to do anything about it, but that's neither here nor there at this point. But anyway, yeah, so that's what I've been doing this week. So, Chris, you got anything you want to add before we move on?
No.
All right. In that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, I wanted to, because we had been doing some pretty heavy stuff recently. We had done a whole little mini series on cults. We did have the fun one about Mr. Buckheimer that we did last week. But this week, I wanted to go back to slightly less serious subject matter, specifically video games, which are our, you know, bread and butter here at Smashpad. And specifically, I wanted to talk about sort of the one of the obscure fighting games that proliferated everywhere in the 90s. And what I'm going to talk about this week is a game I played a lot when I was a kid, because this was like one of those games that was I would class as like a rental. Back in the old days when people used to have, you know, go to video rental stores to rent movies and video games, which was totally a thing. that, you know, me and Chris and, you know, a lot of us at Smash Pad grew up doing. It was a big part of our childhood. And there were a bunch of these games that were essentially basically just games that were for a rental, basically. You got it for a weekend and then you forgot all about it. And this is definitely one of those games. It was essentially, they had a lot of, I guess you could say, ambition for it, but the game just, it just never really pulled through the way they wanted it and needed it to be. But it did end up like kind of doing some stuff that is unusual, even for its era, and also kind of pioneered some stuff in a weird way. And the game is a fighting game from way back in the mid-90s, and it's called Balls. Ballz, sometimes also known as Balls 3D. Now, Chris, did you ever see this game?
Probably not outside of magazines.
Yeah, so before I talk a little bit about what Balls was, I kind of have to talk about its developer, which was a company called PF Magic. Now, PF Magic was born out of a hardware venture with AT&T and Sega that fell through. Basically, they were going to manufacture this accessory for the Sega Genesis that was called the Edge, which was to allow for it was one of the earliest efforts to allow online multiplayer over telephone lines. Which, remember, again, this is the early 90s we're talking about, and that kind of thing just wasn't really a thing then. It just didn't exist. And they are a lot of like PF Magic does have to be given credit for the fact that they were wanting to do that early on. But anyway, the problem ended up being that the device just ended up being too costly, and so AT&T pulled out at the last second. And basically, PF Magic were left with only half of their original fundie. So they just decided they needed a new product to work on. And they decided, well, let's make a game. What they ended up doing was, and this is where it's funny, because this company, PF Magic, was actually co-founded by Rob Fulop, who was a programmer that, among other things, notoriously worked on Night Trap. And so they decided, you know, okay, well, let's go into gaming. And so they ended up, the first game that they ended up putting out, of course, like I said, was Balls. But that wasn't the only product they actually put out. In fact, they became even more successful after Balls kind of bombed, when they came up with the idea of why don't we make a bunch of games that are based around pets, that you can adopt, you can raise, care for, and breed, that kind of thing. And with that, they ended up putting out a title called Pets, PETZ, which, if you've ever heard of, that yes, it's that one. The ones they did one for dogs, they did one for cats. It ended up starting a whole franchise that started out on the PC. It eventually moved over to handheld consoles. It was also on the Wii. It became a massive success. It was a huge, very popular thing. It's heavily credited with popularizing the idea of virtual pets as a gimmick. And they ended up making a ton of money through it. Eventually, of course, they were bought out by Ubisoft, who eventually dissolved the company and got the copyright for all of its stuff. So PF Magic doesn't really exist anymore, but its copyrights are now held by Ubisoft. The one probably exception, of course, being Balls. Because Balls was an ambitious, very graphically unusual title that tried to do something that at the time was still very much a novel concept in fighting games. Balls 3D was, as the title would suggest, a 3D fighter, where two characters fought in a three-dimensional rotating area with, you know, a sort of random skybox in the background to sort of make up what the stage was supposed to be. And it was famous for the fact that it had this pseudo 3D look that basically very few other games at the time were able to copy. You had, you know, obviously at the time when it came to 3D fighting games, you had, you know, Virtua Fighter. And you also had Tekken, both of which came out around the same time that this game came out and were, you know, hitting it up at the arcades. But basically, the idea for this game was, okay, we want to make a pseudo 3D look, but we're working with, like, you know, 16-bit you know, consoles here, so what are we going to do? Well, they came up with the idea of rendering all of the characters in the game with spheres, just a series of spheres to represent everything. You know, a line of spheres to represent arms, a big sphere to represent a torso, you know, a big sphere followed by a line of spheres for legs. You get the idea. And like, there were a bunch of different weird weirdo characters, because they decided to go kind of wacky with it, because they realized that, you know, we're using balls, so, as you know, spheres as our basic sort of graphical component, so we kind of have to think outside of the box to make, you know, these characters that are like recognizable to a certain extent, to like, if you were to look at them, you could sort of get an idea of what they were. What they came up with was just a bunch of really bizarre characters. Amongst other things, there was a clown who was one of the primary characters. There was a gorilla, sort of like large monkey type thing, a sumo wrestler, a caveman, and the caveman was particularly funny because he had like big googly eyes, and he was like the one character with a weapon, which was like this club that was made out of, you know, white spheres. There was one that was a bodybuilder. There was one that was a ballerina named Divine, and I remember her particularly because she was probably one of the hardest characters to learn to control because her whole thing was based around motion. There was another character that was a rhinoceros. And then finally, there was a character that was like a superhero. But on top of that, you also had these series of like mini bosses that you had to go up against. And they were particularly strange. One of them was an ostrich. Another one was a kangaroo or like a wallaby with like boxing gloves. Another was a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And then there was like the last two bosses. One of them was a genie called Lamprey, and he had like the ability to turn into like a snake. And then the last, which was the main boss, was a character called the Jester. And he was like he has like this very simple sort of black and white Harlequin type look to him. He's very hard to believe he can, to be. He can like disassemble himself and move about the floor. His attacks are really, really strong. And he also is one of those final boss characters that has like a resurrection maneuver, which makes it even more horrifying. And then what happened is then after you would beat the Jester, you then had the ability to play as like one of the boss characters. You don't really get to choose which one. The game just sort of randomly chooses for you. But then you have to like go through the game again to get like changed back. It was a very weird game, and what was especially weird about it, not just the graphics, was also like the soundtrack. The soundtrack to this game was like the best way I can describe it is like somebody trying to do like mid-90s house music through like a crappy Casio keyboard for like a shitty porno tape. It's really bizarre. And on top of that, there was this, because like none of the characters could really talk or anything, A lot of information would be conveyed by like these like fake digital screens that were in the background, and the game would just constantly throw all these weird quips and stuff about after every attack, and it was trying to be like that edgy mid-90s type deal where they can't curse or anything, but they still try to be like to the extreme. So it was really stupid. It would be stuff like, lick the mat, chump, or crap like that. It was really dumb. But like I said, I played the game a bunch when I was a kid, because it was just one of those titles that was always there. And if I got there, at the video store, and it's like, what I wanted was already taken, which was not unheard of to happen back then. I just decided I would be just like, all right, whatever, I'll just get balls again. But like I said, it did a bunch of stuff that are kind of unique for the time. The fact that it was able to have that pseudo 3D look on a 16-bit console is in and of itself kind of impressive. Especially impressive with the fact that the game kind of ran pretty smoothly. Like it would have like some stops and stuff every so often, like whenever the characters would explode into various bits because, the system just couldn't handle that much, content on the screen at the same time without slowing down a little bit. But there were like three versions of this game that were put out. There was one for the Genesis. There was one for the Super NES, which was the one I played. And there was also a 3DO version, which was a director's cut. And this is generally the version that's considered to be the best of all of them because it was completely smooth. There was like no slowdown or anything like that. The backgrounds were kind of redone to look a bit more detailed. The actual character models. The character models, they technically looked better, but you're still talking about a game where all the characters are essentially made up of a series of spheres, so they just look extra shiny. But the biggest upgrade, of course, was the soundtrack, which was completely original and was actually good. But yeah, so that was Balls, the first title put out by PF Magic before they hit on the virtual pets phenomenon. It's one of those obscure mid-90s fighting game titles that still, like a lot of people like me, still remember semi-fondly, even if the game itself isn't really that good. It got like fairly middling scores back when it came out. EGM gave it like a 6.2. GamePro gave the Genesis a positive review. Next Generation gave it like a 2.2 out of 5. And it's usually sort of thrown into the list of worst fighters ever made, but I don't think it's that bad. I think it was more of a far too ambitious for its time. But yeah, and that'll be yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So with that, it's now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with the assholes of the week. And we start off, of course, with the news that the United States military, late Friday night or early Saturday morning, unauthorized invaded the sovereign nation of Venezuela, kidnapped President Nicolas Maduro to indict him on a bunch of charges, and are basically pretty open about the fact that they want to tap into Venezuela's oil reserves.
And it seems like they. Or Trump keeps saying they want to run the country until they find new people to run it, I guess. But then also, there's no signs that they're actually doing anything right now. So basically, all they did was they took Maduro, and, I guess his wife, I don't know, and just left his awful party in charge of things still, who, are probably worse than he is.
Yeah, I believe the I'm trying to remember like what Maduro's party is. It's the oh yeah, the PSUV, the United Socialist Party of Venezuela. That's the one that Hugo Chavez founded. Like you said, basically, yeah, the United Socialist Party is still in charge. The vice president, I believe, is currently, if I know how like the secession is supposed to work, is supposed to be the one in charge of the country right now. Technically, Venezuela's military has not surrendered, so like this is the there is no like transition or anything that's happening right now. It's really confusing because, like I said at the top of the show, it looks like this whole thing happened without the Venezuelan military even firing a shot, which seems to imply that someone in Venezuela's military was just ready to get rid of the guy. Which I don't blame them because Maduro has essentially been ruling the country as a pseudo dictator for the better part of a decade now. And I mean, you can see what Venezuela looks like.
Yeah, and it seems like he probably negotiated some sort of exit deal.
I would not be surprised if like this was like, look, you know what, just get me out of here. They have, and we, you've seen the photograph by now, right? The one of him in the
Which one?
handcuff, the one of him in the handcuffs with the
The
shades and
AI
the water
one?
bottle. Yeah.
There's one that's AI generated, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know which one, but basically, there's also the one I think from Mar-a-Lago of them in their the secure facility where they have Twitter on in the background, just seeing who's talking about Venezuela. I was like, God, these people are idiots. So yeah, they're trying to pull up new charges. I guess this narco-terrorism conspiracy charges and whatnot they're trying to do. Which they indicted him back in 2020, as the COVID pandemic was starting, and just never got him. Guessing because there are more important things going on, unfortunately for Trump. So now they're going to try and do this again. We'll see if they stick at all. It's one thing doing that when they have no means of actually having any consequences for it. It's another thing when he's in there, capture and actually standing on trial for things that we don't really have any authority to actually do.
People have been kind of comparing to like what happened back in, I think, 1990 when the U.S. military went into Panama and captured Noriega. Which, when you consider like the drug peddling charges and stuff, there's a lot of similarities between the two. Because Noriega was, when he was essentially ruling as dictator of Panama, he also became a hardcore drug trafficker. Because he was a former CIA asset, you see, so he learned from the best. But yeah, so Maduro's, I guess, in New York right now. Venezuela is essentially kind of up in the air about what they're going to do. Obviously, the Trump administration is talking big because that's what they do. Last I checked, I think Senator Tim Kaine is trying to force a vote to get people to vote on Trump's war powers. No idea how that's going to go down or if it'll ever even go through. Yeah, that's what happened. The U.S. invaded a sovereign nation unprovoked and kidnapped its leader. But yeah, so that's one of the big ones. We also got the story about the shit that went down at a Swiss Alpine bar for New Year's Eve. There was this really awful fire that broke out that killed 40 people and injured like 115 others. It's just a hell of a story.
It was at this sort of ski resort. Yeah, it was sort of crowded for the celebration and seemed to turn badly when a fire started. I don't know that they've figured out what the cause was for it. But yeah, a bunch of people died. Unfortunately, and many others seriously injured. Just an awful situation.
So that happened, and then we have this just incredibly infuriating story. The Trump administration has announced that they're going to be freezing all child care funds to every state in the wake of claims of fraud schemes at a series of daycare centers in Minnesota run by Somali residents. And it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
I want to make that very clear from the beginning. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, it comes from one guy who was at the January 6th insurrection. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Along with, I think, one of the other guys that he was with is the guy that took the picture in Nancy Pelosi's office
mm-hmm.
with his foot up on the desk. So, you know, very trustworthy people on all of this. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they are freezing child care funds to all states
mm-hmm.
until they provide more verification about the programs in a move fueled by a series of alleged fraud schemes at Minnesota daycare centers.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if anything actually comes of this. But yeah, the Minnesota Democratic Attorney General, Keith Ellison, said he is exploring all our legal options to ensure that critical child care services do not get abruptly slashed because based on pretext and grandstanding.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how this goes, but great for everybody to get punished for something that may not even actually been happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Yeah. But it's not all terrible. We got a couple heroes of the week to discuss. One of them is in the state of Iowa, their state senate, a Democrat by the name of Renee Hardman, was elected, which is denying the GOP a supermajority.
Yep. Renee Hardman was elected to the Iowa State Senate on Tuesday mm-hmm. in a year-end special election. She beat Republican Lucas Lofton by an overwhelming margin.
Yep.
Led by about 43 percentage points.
Yep.
Which is big, especially because mm-hmm. I believe she is one of the few black women to be in their state senate.
Yep.
They had Democrat Mike Zimmer first flipped a seat in January, winning a district that had strongly favored Trump in the 2024 election.
Mm-hmm.
In August, Democrat Caitlin Dre handily defeated her GOP opponent in the Republican stronghold of northwestern Iowa, giving mm-hmm. Democrats 17 to Republicans 33. And Claire Selcy, a Democrat, died October 6th, so this was filling that seat and kind of restored mm-hmm. the blockage of the supermajority.
Mm-hmm.
So now they'll need to get support from at least one Democrat to approve the governor's nominees, so
mm-hmm.
that'll be good for them.
Yep. So, yeah, there's that. And once again, like, all these special elections and the Democrats are just nailing every single one of them, well, except for that one, and that one came very close. So, and then, of course, the other major hero of the week, Zoran Mandani was officially sworn in as the new mayor of the city of New York.
Yeah, on the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
He was sworn in at the former subway station that used to was shut down, I think, 80 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Had his big speech the following morning. To celebrate and seem very much wanting to use the power of his government to help people as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, shake off the negativity of big government,
mm-hmm.
Which will be fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
And he says here, I was elected as a democratic socialist. I will govern as a democratic socialist. I will not abandon my principles for fear of being deemed radical. Had AOC and Bernie Sanders speak there as well.
Yep.
So that's great.
In fact, I believe Bernie was the one who actually swore him in. Yeah.
No, the Letitia James did it.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, that was fun to see. So we'll see how mm-hmm. that goes. And yeah.
Yeah. So really cool. We'll see what we're doing. And like, he was, as soon as it was over, he was immediately in his office getting to work. So, I foresee big things coming out from his administration. But anyway, that's the end of the show proper. We're going to now move on to the proper show proper. And unfortunately for the night, we have to say goodbye to Mr. Isaiah Whitlock Jr., one of the great character actors. He passed away this week at the age of 71. He did a bunch of work on, well, you go through it, 'cause he had quite the resume.
Yeah, he was the corrupt state senator Clay Davis on The Wire. He was also in Veep, as a good character there. Yeah, he did a lot of bit parts, and a lot of things. Trying to look at what else he worked on here. He was in like a bunch of different Law and Order episodes whenever they were willing to have him on. Also in Law and Order Special Victims Unit, Criminal Intent, and NYPD Blue, and the Sort of Bunch of Chappelle show. What else? He was on, Law and Order Special Victims Unit. Louis. I was part of Lucky Seven's main cast. The Blacklist. A bunch of stuff. Did a lot of work. Unfortunately, seemed to just get the wrong kind of illness at the wrong time and passed away.
It
Still a
happens.
fairly young age. He seemed to only start acting in his mid-30s, so had only been doing it since, I think, he was in a TV movie for the Christmas Carol in 81, but mostly started in 87 doing work. Did a lot of voice acting. A lot of good work, and any more reasons to watch The Wire or rewatch it? That's a good one to check out now.
Oh yeah, definitely.
He had that specific way of saying shit, which he said he got from his uncle. From an uncle who used it, and then people started putting it in the script to have him say it that way specifically. So he liked having to do that. So also, I guess, created had a Kickstarter back in 2015 where he sold talking bobbleheads of him saying it, and that went pretty well. So gave some special prototypes to David Simon, the showrunner for The Wire, and also Barack Obama, where he said Obama enjoyed it and kept it. He was also on the that Nick Cage documentary series on Netflix about the history of swear words, for the episode dedicated to shit, as he should be. So a good work for him. So go check out some of his stuff.
So yeah, rest in peace, Mr. Whitlock. You gave us a hell of a legacy to go by. But moving on from there, some of y'all may have noticed in photographs recently. Well, I mean, you have for a few months now. President Trump has constantly been putting makeup on one of his hands because it's very obvious there's like a bruise there. Well, it recently people started finding out that he's now gotten to putting makeup on both hands. And when asked about it, he said that he has been taking more aspirin than doctors typically recommend in order to, quote, thin out his blood.
The specific quote is, "They say aspirin is good for thinning out the blood, and I don't want thick blood pouring through my heart. I want nice thin blood pouring through my heart." Does that make sense? It's like he's really got a way with words, the best words, they say. He says he takes about 325 milligrams of daily aspirin. Recommended is 81 in a low dose aspirin. He said he's been doing that for ages, so his body's probably used to it to a degree. Though, it's the sort of thing that's they say here, like, you're not supposed to. It's reasonable to stop preventative aspirin in people already taking it around age 75 years. But they also recommend nobody start taking a daily dose of aspirin if you're over 60. So if you're already been doing it, probably best to just keep doing it versus kind of going through the withdrawal of it. But he puts it in such eloquent terms.
That's funny. All right. So yeah, that's happening. We also found out this week that from Jack Smith's interview that he gave with the House Judiciary Committee, and it appears to show that he was pretty confident in the evidence that he'd managed to acquire.
Yeah. They put out some video and some transcript versions of it. And yeah, he talks about how the January 6th riot does not happen without Donald Trump. Characterized him as the most culpable and most responsible person in the criminal conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 election. The evidence here made clear that President Trump was, by large measure, the most culpable, most responsible person in this conspiracy. Crimes are committed for his benefit. The attack that happened at the Capitol, part of his case, does not happen without him. The other co-conspirators are doing this for his benefit. So, in terms of why we would pursue a case against him, I entirely disagree with any characterization that our work was in any way meant to hamper him in the presidential election. And also, sort of said, that he felt his case was pretty airtight. So yeah, there's some more details here, but yeah, that's obviously not going to result in anything, but just shows that he wasn't fucking around as we were not expecting. But unfortunately, that just took long enough that he won the election and made it all moot. So that's a shame.
So, shame, yeah, but and now we got some good news. Just to sort of like a little sort of a filler in of like what this is. Here in Georgia, in Atlanta, for a long t for a couple years now, there's been this ongoing sort of struggle that's been going on between protesters and the state government over the the demolishing of this wildlife preserve and turning it into a like a training center for the Atlanta PD. It sometimes gets called Cop City. And if you it, like obviously there's a lot I can't go over here because this is just too long a story. But there's been a bunch of protesters and there's been like violence and stuff about it. One guy actually got shot and killed, even though he was unarmed. And a bunch of people were arrested. And this week, a judge in here in the state of Georgia tossed out racketeering charges that had been put against the protesters. So that's good.
Yeah. There were always just trumped up charges against them, trying to push the power of the cops, and finally got tossed out, so great to see.
Yeah, so that's good to hear. I'm glad that it was clear enough that it was trumped up charges that they were willing to toss them out. So, and then we got news this week that a man in Texas was arrested and charged with international terrorism for trying to aid ISIS.
21-year-old Texas man was providing bomb materials and money to people he believed were affiliated with the Islamic State group, has been federally charged with international terrorism. He's accusing bomb-making materials to an undercover federal agent who he believed was an ISIS brother. This was a sting operation on December 22nd after an undercover NYPD employee on a social media account belonging to him that followed several accounts supporting the Islamic State group. He began messaging with Garza in October, and the Justice Department said he soon shared that he ascribed to the ISIS ideology. He's accused of sending the undercover employee small amounts of cryptocurrency in November and December, as he believed his money was supporting the Islamic State group. During the meeting, investigators say Garza described to an undercover FBI agent how to mix explosives he provided, offered to share an instructional video on bomb making. He was arrested shortly after. So yeah, probably good to get this guy off of there, off the streets, and
Yeah, seriously.
doing any of this.
So yeah, that happened. Glad they caught him. And I think we brought this up last week. President Trump decided to attach his name to the Kennedy Center, which obviously a lot of people are pissed about. And because of it, they've now got a handful of acts canceling planned events due to the name change.
Yeah, there's been a few of these. Yeah, there was a jazz New Year's event that was going to be happening with the Cookers, a jazz supergroup that was has been working together for 2 decades. So they were pulling out, and yeah, I think the I don't know if the event still happened or if they were just the ones pulling out. It was a dance group that said they were pulling out a performance scheduled for April, saying they could no longer permit them or permit ourselves nor ask our audience to step inside this once institution. And yeah, musician Chuck Redd canceled a Christmas Eve performance last week. They also come amid declining sales for tickets to the venue, as well as news that viewership for December 23rd broadcast of the Kennedy Center Honors had. Yeah, so like the guy that's the president of the Kennedy Center, I forget what his name is. Was basically, you know, Richard Grinnell was basically threatening lawsuits and such against them, and said this ridiculous thing. The artists who are now canceling shows were booked by the previous far left leadership. Said the last minute cancellations proved that they were always unwilling to perform for everyone, even those they disagree with politically. Yeah, saying they've been flooded with inquiries from real artists willing to perform for everyone and who reject political statements in their artistry, which is like, well, you don't give a shit about any of this. So, and yeah, basically it's asserted that they don't care about making art for people. It's like, sure. So yeah, that's their Joker situation they're in now. Just driving everybody away. And it's like, if you want your name on this memorial center, you should probably be dead, Trump. Then we'll consider it.
Especially because that center was specifically dedicated to President Kennedy after he was assassinated. So, yeah, it's very tacky.
That's his style, tacky.
But anyway, in some science news, last year in 2025, five new species were discovered.
So yeah, there's five here they have. I'm sure there might have been more, but these are sort of the some of the notable ones. First one here is an ancient sea cow that existed in the Persian Gulf. Yeah, this long extinct sea cow's fossil remains were discovered in Al-Mazabiya, Qatar. Now known to be the richest fossil sea cow deposit in the world. Like today's manatees and dugongs, it mainly grazed on seagrass, was considered an ecosystem engineer in the coastal waters of the Persian Gulf, where it primarily lived. So that's a cool one. There's a new mini marsupial in the Andes Mountains. The what's it called here? Marmosa chachapoya. To honor the Chachapoya people who formerly occupied the area. It's a beady-eyed mouse opossum. There's that. That's a cool thing. Little tiny thing, so that's cool. There's an undercover spider in Northern California. Definitely don't look at this thing if you want to sleep. This is kind of a clear spider. Yeah, it's part of the brown spider species, Siskiyou armilia. Yeah, many species look similar because they live in the same kind of habitat under rocks or in dark, humid places. Yeah, they had to perform DNA analysis to make sure this was different from the others. So yeah, that's neat. There's a new snailfish, the bumpy snailfish, was captured by researchers at Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute during an expedition off the shores of Central California. It has almost like a smile to its face on it. It looks kind of cute. And yeah, there's new frogs here, found in Tanzania, that do live births. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a name here for this particular one. But yeah, that's neat. Frogs usually lay eggs, so when it's doing a live birth
Yeah.
is kind of interesting. So there you go. Some fun new species.
Yeah. So we got that. We also found out this week from a study that's suggesting that Titan, one of Saturn's moons, may not have a watery ocean under its icy surface, unfortunately.
Yeah. Instead, it may hold deep layers of ice and slush more akin to Earth's polar seas, with pockets of melted water where life could possibly survive and even thrive. But yeah, this comes from observations made years ago by the Cassini spacecraft that orbited around Saturn. They stress that no one has found any signs of life at Titan, the solar system's second largest moon. That's about 3,200 miles across. But yeah, this suggests a slushy, near melting environment. Saying there's strong justification for continued optimism regarding the potential for extraterrestrial life. Is what that form of that might be. It's possibly just microscopic. But yeah, more interesting news about Titan. They're one of the most interesting parts of our solar system.
So there's that, and then we're gonna move on to the entertainment portion of the show. We got a kind of short one, but we got a couple stories here. The first big one being Zootopia 2 has officially become the highest grossing animated film in history after beating Frozen 2's mark.
Yeah. It's reached $1.46 billion, beating Frozen 2, which was 1.45. Yeah, made 333 million domestically and 1.13 billion overseas. So yeah, still did really well this last or at least during Christmas holiday weekend. Did about 87.9 million onto that tally, so probably keep going for a bit more and put that up a bit higher. So yeah, good for them.
That's very impressive, and just good shit. We also got news, speaking of Disney, Tron Ares will arrive on Disney Plus starting January 7th. So that's w next Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't know if it's good news or not, but
I've
that's maybe
not heard
it's.
good things about that movie.
Yeah. So you won't have to make the mistake of paying to go see it and being stuck in a room watching it. But yeah, I'd like to check it out and see what's going on there.
And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Malcolm in the Middle, Life Still Unfair.
Yeah, which looks pretty good. Basically, the premise here is that after sort of getting out of the house, Malcolm has basically deserted his family and just built his own family. But unfortunately, they guilt him to coming back and destroy his life again. So yeah, brought everybody back, but the actor that played Dewey, they have a new actor playing him because the original kid went to Harvard and did not want to act anymore, which is
And I don't
good for
blame him.
him. Yeah. But yeah, 4-part event starting April 10th, so I'm looking forward to this. The original show is great, and this seems like they're doing more of that good stuff. So I have like a Hal's men's group. I forget what they're called. They have the inappropriate name, Gentlemen Callers,
Yeah, something like that.
or like they don't recognize what that means, but they're having fun with it, I guess. And I think the whole thing is that the house is clean because there's no more kids to wreck it constantly and all that. So
Basically.
yeah, like they got their shit together for once because there's no kids to destroy everything.
So, with that, I do believe we have got ourselves a show together, folks. Yes, we do. I believe we've got ourselves a show. So, I would like to remind all of the listeners, if you got a question or a comment or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, RSS, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if you can't find one, if we're not on there, just wait a few minutes. We'll be on there eventually. But yeah, we're going to go ahead, wind it down here. Thank you, Chris, once again for joining me on this little endeavor. All of you out there who are listening, if you're a person who's just discovering us at SmashPad, or you're someone who's been with us since the very first show, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may hate you, but there's a good 50-50 chance that they'll like us, and that looks like something that'll benefit everybody. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Thank you all for joining us. Join us again next week for another crazy installment of Let's Weekend, because the new year just started and already shit's going crazy. So you know we're going to have some material to work with. And hopefully my mom will be back from the hospital by then. But until then, we'll see you guys next week. Good night.